This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon. For many Westerners, the Kama Sutra is a classic case of a classic text that students pass from hand to hand and say, "Show me the good parts." It is an ancient detailed guide to romance and erotic love written in 3rd century India. It was first popularized in the West in a translation by the 19th century British adventurer Sir Richard Francis Burton, who, it was always inferred, passed on the manual only after considerable road testing of its precepts. Now Wendy Doniger, a professor of religious history at the University of Chicago, and Sudhir Kakkar, a psychoanalyst at Harvard University, have prepared the first truly modern translation of the Kama Sutra. It is expanded, it is explicit, and it is published by the Oxford University Press. Professor Wendy Doniger joins us from the studios of Station WCAI in Woods Hole, Massachusetts. Professor, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks, Scott, for having me here.
And why did you feel a new translation was necessary?
Because the old one wasn't good enough. I tried it out on my students, and for years I never really looked that carefully at it because I was using the Sanskrit text. And then just a few years ago, while teaching it in English, one of my students said, "I don't understand this line." And I said, "Sounds funny to me, come to think of it," and looked at the Sanskrit. And really, that was the first time that I realized how far Burton strayed. He was, after all, part of the Victorian imperialist army, and it made it sound as if it was an orientalist book, an anthropological book, instead of what everybody really knew it was, and he knew too, about human sexuality anywhere.
Mm-hmm. What percentage of this new translation that you and Sudhir Kakkar have accomplished is turned over to what I'll refer to as the nuts and bolts?
Of the seven books, book two is about the sexual act, and one chapter of that book is devoted to the sexual act in its physical immediacy. So it's really a small part of the text as a whole is what everybody thinks the whole book is about, which is the positions, the different ways of doing it, and so forth. The book, in our translation, is about 200 pages long, and perhaps there's 10 pages about doing it.
In your mind, is the Kama Sutra amoral?
I think it's more complicated than that. One has to compare it with the morals of its time. It's not a matter whether it would satisfy a Presbyterian, but whether in its time it was moral or not. And even for its time, it goes against some of the classical teachings of Dharma, which it refers to in passing. Dharma, basically, the moral law of India, the religious law of India, was, like most religious laws, strongly against adultery. Mm-hmm. Now, the Kama Sutra devotes one of its seven books to adultery and goes on and on and on.
When you say devotes it, it's a how-to.
It's how to do it. But at the end of almost every chapter is a few verses. The text as a whole is in prose, and there are these verses at the end, and the verses have a completely different viewpoint. And this is something I think rather significant that was also left out of the Burton translation, where a number of the verses are left in prose, and you can't see that there's a different voice speaking. So where the whole text says, do this, do that, at the end of the chapter, there's a voice saying just what you were asking for, the broader human concerns, a wiser, calmer voice saying, don't just do what feels good. Think about what your partner is thinking of and wants and the considerations of that sort. And at the end of the book of adultery, he doubles back and says, of course I'm not writing all of this to teach you how to commit adultery. I wouldn't dream of doing such a thing. This is so that people might tell if their wife or husband is likely to be committing adultery. Mm-hmm. And that's the only reason I've written this book. And I don't believe it. I think he's just sort of covering up in order to give the book a veneer more in keeping with the morals of its time than it really was.
There's a section I'd like you to read, and if you could set it up a bit for us. I just found this a very literal and really very moving description of erotic love, of the steam that can inhabit people when they feel deeply for one another.
Yes, and I think it's significant that this is at the end of a chapter and is in verse where the voice of the author comes in personally and qualifies what he said before. He's told you a lot of tricks, a lot of things you can do, and a lot of stuff. And now he says, now think about what you're doing. This is one of my favorite parts, too. This is no matter for numerical lists or textbook tables of contents. For people joined in sexual ecstasy, passion is what makes things happen. The emotions and fantasies conjured up in a moment in the midst of sexual chaos cannot be imagined even in dreams. For just as a horse in full gallop, blinded by the energy of his own speed, pays no attention to any post or hole or ditch on the path, so two lovers, blinded by passion, in the friction of sexual battle, are caught up in their fierce energy and pay no attention to danger. And so a man who understands the text will apply it only after he has come to know the delicacy, ferocity, and strength of his young woman and his own strength. The sexual techniques cannot be used at all times and on all women. The method must be chosen according to the part of the body, the region, and the time. It's a nice passage.
Yeah, it is. And it does seem to suggest that the act of love is particular and distinct. It's not just a plumbing manual.
He says this constantly. He repeats it at the end of several different places about individuals. It's extraordinary in its, again, for its time and place, ancient India, which is so bound to ideas of class and caste. It's extraordinary in its care for individuals. See who you're in bed with. Notice what's going on, where you are, and who she is, and so forth. Mm.
It's been, I guess, in fact, even more than a century since Sir Richard Francis Burton's translation appeared in English in the Western world.
1883, 25 years and a century.
How do you think reading this book in this time affects our sense of perspective about what's here?
What I find most useful now, not the silly positions, which is the old joke about the Kama Sutra, but there's a wisdom in it about sexual psychology, about the nature of attraction, about the nature of wooing, of attracting attention, why it is that people get tired of one another sexually, how what to do when people get tired of one another sexually. There's a real universality, not just about the positions of the male and female bodies, which is rather limited after all, but in the positions of their minds.
Professor, is the Kama Sutra finally a great book?
I think it's a great book. It's a kind of a monument in human history. It is the earliest book of this sort, and it has a greatness in its attempt at completeness, which is kind of like Diderot's old encyclopedia, which also tried to be everything, and of course nothing ever is everything. No text ever covers it, but it has a wonderful ambition. So yes, I think it is really one of the milestones. Everybody who reads about India reads the Bhagavad Gita, which I think in some ways has a lot less to tell us than the Kama Sutra. It is one of the great Indian classics, and I think it's one of the world classics, yes.
Professor, thank you very much.
Thanks for your wonderful questions.
Speaking with us from the studios of WCAI in Woods Hole, Massachusetts, University of Chicago, Professor Wendy Doniger, who along with Sudhir Kakkar is one of the translators of the new version of the Kama Sutra.